Do you love comedy paired with video games paired with Dungeons & Dragons? Then join us, Adam,
Alan,
and Rowan,
on the Viva La Dirt League D&D podcast.
You may know us from our sketch comedy channel Viva La Dirt League or series such as Epic NBC Men and Bored. But did you know we also play D&D weekly with campaigns based within the world of a video game?
With our fourth member Ben and DM Rob, you can find the Viva La Dirt League D&D podcast on your favourite podcast platforms or the full videos on YouTube.
You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, August 28th, 2024, and I'm your old pal, Joey O.B.
And I'm Troy. Let's get physical, LaValle.
You getting physical this morning, buddy?
No, I have a physical today.
Oh, you do? Amazing.
I have my annual physical, yeah.
We're taking care of ourselves. Oh, God, I hate talking about this because it makes me sick to my stomach. I have to talk about old man stuff. I have to get a filling repaired today.
Oh, man.
God.
Would you chip your tooth on a juju fruit? Juju fruit?
I was having another round of atomic fireballs, my favorite, and jawbreakers. No, I'm just old, dude. Like, yeah. I don't eat candy really anymore. I brush my teeth multiple times a day. I haven't had a cavity in a really long time. And I just went, to this about 2 months ago, maybe. And she was like, I'm not liking the look of this filling you got when you were 11. like it's rotting out of your head.
That's a long time for a filling.
Yeah, and I need to fix it. You know what I mean? And it's just like, God. So now I just hate it. I mean, you're numb. It's not like painful.
Yeah.
But they're all up in your mouth with that shit. And it's all like the bright lights and the drilling. I just hate it.
I don't mind. I don't mind it. My 6-year-old doesn't care for it.
Yes. I was going to say, I do have the emotions of a child when it comes to the dentist. I'm like, I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't mind. I like it's like get in there, play around in there. But they usually have like the dental hygienist do the cleaning, and she's a butcher.
Yeah,
she's very nice, but she's always like, "Does that hurt? Does that hurt? Is that too much?" And I'm just like, let me just spit real quick,
viscera.
It's like so
just
much
like
blood
chunks of gum, just like just like hitting the. Oh my God,
dude, it's so funny. So I didn't have health insurance until I got married. Now we have health insurance through the company, but like between 21 and 40, I was without health insurance. And so I didn't have annual physicals.
For 19 years, did you not go to a dentist?
Yeah, I was broke. I didn't have any money. My parents didn't have any money. Like I had no way of doing it. So like when I got sick, I had to go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
This was before like these little pop-up urgent cares were all over the place. Yeah. The urgent care business. Yeah, I'd just fucking go in there and then like no money. So like the bill would come. I'd be like, well, I can't pay that.
Wait, did you ever have a sore tooth? Did you ever have to get a tooth pulled? Did you ever have
I would go to get cleanings every few years instead of twice a year and just pay cash for it because the cleaning wasn't bad.
Well,
and be like, please don't have a cavity. Please don't have a cavity. And then from time to time, there was one time I remember I was sitting at a Broadway show and like, clunk, something fell out of the back of my mouth. Like, I think that's a cavity. I got to go get that taken care of. So then I was like, oh, God, paying cash to have like a filling. It's brutal, dude. Yeah, it wasn't until I got married that I got on my wife's health insurance.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, dental insurance, at least at our age, it's like, it's not doing much. Like, you're pretty much paying out of pocket for anything besides, so cleaning is free. That's nice. But like, other than that, yeah, you're paying because dental insurance is so cheap. Anyway, we don't have to get that road.
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about the breakdown of dental insurance versus medical care. Anyway, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the FOD. We got some exciting news coming up this week, as usual. We'll get into episode 48 of the Glass Cannon podcast and a nice little We Are Stupid from Professor Eric with positives and negatives couple negatives, but a couple praiseworthy comments, which I like. And then, of course, a little listener mail. So we talked about it a little bit last week, but just want to hammer it home to everybody. Next week, our playthrough of Ember is going to begin. Ember, which is the new Kickstarter project from our friends at Foundry VTT. It is their own original online tabletop role-playing game. It is is so awesome. It is designed to fuse into one your tabletop RPG experience and a multiplayer digital RPG experience into one thing, so that you have the awesome facilitation, digital facilitation of a multiplayer video game, but the openness, sandboxiness, and the ability to improv of a tabletop role-playing game. I think that they, you know, from what we've seen so far, because we've started to record this, we haven't finished recording it, they're hitting it really close to the mark, because it looks like you're playing a video game at times, and then other times you just, you know, descend into hilarity and silliness and, like, let the story go where it will. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's wildly impressive. And I mean, for everyone that was clamoring for us to join Foundry for so long and was excited when we joined, like, if you're a Foundry virtual tabletop purist, it's going to be right up your alley. And it's just like we barely scratched the surface with it, and we're already blown away for a product that's not going to come out for a while. So, you know, make sure when we drop the link to the Kickstarter and you want to use our link so that, you know, Foundry knows that we're sending you over there, make sure you throw them a few bucks, because it's a very ambitious project that's going to take a village to bring to light.
Yeah, we'll put the link in the description for this show on YouTube and in the podcast. So click on that link to go and get you can get notified for when the Kickstarter actually goes live. And if you're hearing this after it's already live, it's the whole month of September. So just jump over there. And if you're interested, support them and get an early access to this really cool project. I think that it's really going to blow people away. I think that it's really going to be an amazing alternative for people that have to game at home. It takes so much of the work out for GMs and players for the digital game experience. It's really, really awesome for a TTRPG. So good luck to them, and we wish them the best. Other than that, really not much new going on. If you are a Vorpal subscriber to our subscription service, and that's $25 a month, if you're at the $25 a month tier, you can come hang out tonight, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. Jared and I are getting together for another Talk Nerdy Town Hall on our Discord stages. And that means you guys come up to the stage and just chat with us. And we're just going to be talking nerdy, just hanging out, talking nerd stuff. And we love to take callers, as we call it. And people come up and chat. And I sympathize with them and agree with them. And Jared roasts them and argues with everything everyone says. So it's a really, really fun time. Please come by if you're available. And if you're not at the Vorpal tier, just upgrade. Upgrade takes 2 seconds. Upgrade, and you can come hang out with us tonight. Be awesome. So 7:30 Eastern on our Discord, we'll be hanging out live. And I believe, can't promise it, but I believe we will have special guest Matthew Cavadacasa on this one. We're going to be talking about the writing and design of a prequel, which I think is an interesting concept. Writing something that happened before the thing that people know. How do you approach that, you know, both in movies, but also in like role-playing games? If you're writing your character's backstory, if you're writing details that led to what something we already know, how do you craft that? How do you design that? And so hopefully we can have Matthew will be there.
You'd be talking about chest hair styling.
That'll be another episode. We'll have him on at Christmas time.
Hair
sweaters.
Hair sweaters.
For the Christmas season.
Speaking of subscription services, if you are still a member of our Patreon, which shockingly, actually, I guess not shockingly, people, I probably subscribe to services that are no longer, that I don't use at all.
And also, I have been a member of things that people have said you need to do this to shift over or whatever. Right. And like, here's the deadline. And I wait until the deadline passes.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I got to go do that.
Yeah, I mean, that happened. We launched the new subscription service almost coming up on the 1 year anniversary, which is crazy, this September. And as of September 1st, we'll no longer be cross posting on Patreon, because we've been cross posting, you know, for people who were slow to make the transition, and even people who didn't make the transition. So the Patreon will be, you know, officially dead. You know, all the back content will stay on there, but there'll be none of the new content, no new legacies, no new Blood of the Wilds, nothing on there. And obviously the new subscription service has 10 times what's on Patreon, because it's got Gatewalkers ad free. It's got Giant Slayer ad free. It's got everything on there. So as of September 1st, we're going to be just kind of, you know, mothballing the Patreon. Your Discord access is going to be the only way to be able to get the Discord access is through Supercast and the new service. So make sure we posted something on the Patreon. But if you're listening to this, you're like, ah, shit, I got to do that. You can do it, and you get a 30-day free trial. So if you've been on the fence, if you've been on the fence or of any other reason, at least try the 30-day free trial to see what everybody else has seen, that it's just a complete and total upgrade, you know, based on our needs. It's nothing against Patreon. I love Patreon. I thought Patreon was great. It Patreon's was awesome. Life-changing for us. But because we put out so much content.
Well, no, because Supercast, we put out so many different story podcasts, Patreon did not support that functionality, and Supercast does. And so what it allows you to do is have separate feeds of the shows you like organized right in those feeds, and exclusive just to you, which is great. Plus, you know, more variety of podcast apps that you can use to listen to your stuff. So, yeah, highly, highly recommend you make that move over if you're able to. All right, let's talk about episode 48 of the GCP.
Okay.
Hell of an ep. Hell of an ep. Man. Action. Comedy. More love? Action.
Love?
Yeah, it really was... cinematic in its scope, as some people mentioned. I really appreciated that terminology, because I think that it nailed it pretty well. The image of this goddess, she who walks through seasons, being almost, you know, the size of the jungle itself in a way, was just beautiful and really incredible. And then the idea that you have to leap onto this creature and people fall and there's true, genuine fear. I mean, I was truly fearing for Ramius's life when I had to make these climb checks and these leap checks. It was just very, very stressful. So overall, and then it also had just so much comedy, so many big laughs, all in all, a great episode. But let's start back at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because it opens with, the fight with this. Right. Is Sphinx the right word? No, Sphinx is like a human face.
Hierarchos Sphinx.
Hierarchos Sphinx. Yes, Hierarchos Sphinx. Talk to me about this creature. What a weird creature. Do you know where it comes from?
No, I don't. I'm looking now to see if it's been around. I'm sure it's been around before. You know, I'll just look
it up. It did sound familiar to me. How do you spell it?
H-I-E-R-A, co, Sphinx. Hierarcho Sphinx. It's a mythical beast. Yeah, yeah, so it's been around. It's not
definitely in
D&D. It is, okay.
It's definitely in D&D.
Yeah, oh yeah, I see in Forgotten Realms.
The hawk-headed Hierosphinx is a common sight within the maze-like tombs and mortuary complexes of Egypt. Okay, yeah, interesting. This reminds me, makes me think of Stargate. Like,
Never
Stargate?
Saw Stargate.
Never saw Stargate? So, like, in Stargate, you're like, they're basically, they connect to this other world, and the other world seems weirdly, like, Egyptian. Mm-hmm. And it basically, like, one of the first things they come in contact with are these guardians, and they're Hierosphinxes. Is that how you pronounce it?
Hierarchosphinx.
Hierarchosphinx. They're Hierarchosphinxes, except they have the bodies of a human and either the head of a hawk or the head of a dog. And the dog head one is, I think, a different name, but the hawk head one is definitely one that's pretty cool. And I think it's played by Digimon Hansu, a young Digimon Hansu. But they're masks, so you don't even know they're people at first. They just look like aliens, but then they remove these big headdresses and you see that they're humans. So anyway, that concept is really interesting, and to see that in a flying creature, always terrified of a flying creature at low level in these TTRPGs.
Yeah, it was good. I was thinking about this fight, especially as I was rewatching it before we put it out there. And my one regret was not getting two of you up there. Like when Barnes went up there, I had this split second where I was like, do I jump him now or do I wait? And I should have waited second.
You just got to be like a statue.
Yeah. It's in the nest. The way I had it emerge, I certainly could have had it emerge. But
You could have had a nest, but not a visible bird.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just, in the moment, I just jumped on it because I didn't think that, like, I didn't think that you guys just wouldn't come up. I was bloodthirsty for Barnes, and I should have waited, because if I got two of you up there and one of you had to climb up there and can't just do some sort of cool ability, now you're pot committed and everyone would have to scramble up there. And now this thing is like just flying around at the top, grabbing you, fucking throwing you off the tower and stuff. So it was still harrowing. But I was mad at myself that I didn't kind of push to have the combat happen at the top of the tower, because that's really how it's intended. But you guys played it the way you should play it based on what I gave you.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a big jump once you enter climbing, active combat climbing into a combat.
Yeah.
Because when you're realizing that each action is going to get you 5 feet, you got to go 15 feet and you have to succeed three times. Now, a crit gets you up higher, but crit is a lot less likely, especially for somebody like Ramius. It's just like, it's crazy deadly. But, you know, like you said, if you're pot committed, you're pot committed. There's really nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
And so having Barnes and somebody else up there would have made, a very different combat. I do that play. Now, I don't get to GM that much Pathfinder these days, but I do that plenty. After a fight, I'm like, God, I just jumped the gun a little too early. I was excited. Yeah. I wanted to try to kill somebody, but I didn't think, like, if I did this, I'd have a better chance of killing somebody, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's interesting to hear. And I agree with you. Having him up there alone, he, of all people, could also get down so easily because of his mirror ability. So that was tricky.
I realized it seconds after I brought the creature out, but it's too late now. I fucked it. I couldn't do it. But that happens, you know. We are not infallible.
All right, but we survive the combat. We defeat the creature. By the way, there's all little things in here that I'm thinking of, and we are stupid, but we're going to get to that in a second. Let's go to the blowing of the horn, which was one of Matthew's iconic funny moments.
I mean, he was way into that.
He was way into that. I mean, he was wrapping his mouth around
it. It's not his first spore horn.
Spore horn. And, oh my God, we could not stop laughing. And when I was Francis told us when we went in to record episode 49, the next recording we went in for, we got into the studio and he told Matthew, he was like, I worked through a rough edit of 48. And he said, I was in here alone laughing, cackling like a madman, just rewatching you doing that. And like, we were just cracking up.
It was so funny.
It was so funny. And it just, to me, it captured, you know, those Jade Regent days, like those things we would just do in the room that everybody would be busting up, just being silly. That was so fun.
It also captures like why it's so great that we have this filmed now. Like, obviously some people still love podcasts and that's great. But like when you get to see the video of what everyone's laughing at, it makes it all the more special.
Yeah. So then we come to the real epic moment of the episode, which is the blowing of the horn, the rising up of She Who Walks Through Seasons, the approach to the tower of She Who Walks Through Seasons, and then our requirement to make this leap onto the creature. Now, I'm going to I'll give you my perspective for a second.
Okay.
In my perspective, it wasn't even meta. It's not meta. It isn't. I just assumed that the creature walks up to the tower like with its nose on it.
Right.
And we jump onto the head, grab the water, and get off. I didn't imagine it as an adventure on top of the creature, right?
Yeah.
So I'm a little like thrown off so I'm fine with just not doing it. Be like, you go get the water, I'll be down here. And so that must have thrown you off a little bit, I would imagine, that I was just like kind of standing down at the bottom. It's like, dude, you have to get up here to continue the adventure. Like, I'm not sure, like, kind of what was going through your head at that moment. But
I'm fine with that. It's like, if he's not going to go, then, you know, next X amount of episodes, Joe's going to be Waldorf and Statler.
Yeah.
I'm totally fine with that, because it's also something we've never really done. Obviously, it sucks for you, but that'll learn you a thing or two about not participating next time.
I don't know that it would suck for me. I think that it would be really interesting to, like, I don't mind not playing for large gaps of time if it's a choice I made that makes me feel like I have agency, like real agency. Like, that's really cool, you know?
I certainly would not have pushed you to go. I'm like, you sure you don't want to go? You know, if you don't want to go, I think that's interesting for the story. And we'd check in with you, and certainly something cool would happen with you and the
elves. Oceans, yeah. Maybe we get attacked or something, a very brief combat or something. Like, there's lots you could do.
Right now, I'm thinking of 20 different things I could do. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. So, good. So, that's good to know.
You should always have that option. Like, if your character's like, I can't do this, you know, I don't think the fun idea is for me to just hand wave it. I think it's much more interesting. Like, so, all right, let's see where this choice takes the story.
Yeah. Well, I think that there is a certain level of that I want to examine in this episode, which, taking it out of the narrative that we did, which I thought was great, the jumps, the falls, they were thrilling and scary, the healing of Asta and Zephyr, and then them being like, Ramius, you have to come. Like, we got to get on this thing. It's huge, and we can't even see where the water is yet. We have to get on it. And then him trying to climb up and the desperation using his deviant ability. It was all really fun. I really enjoyed it. However, I felt like, and I saw some comments to this effect, and I wanted to address it. Mm. I felt like this brought up an issue that I have had in the past with adventures, and not just pre-written adventures, adventures that I have designed.
Yeah.
I've realized maybe sometimes, most of the time accidentally, because if I can plan ahead, I wouldn't have this happen. But sometimes accidentally, you create a situation where you have a high DC check, relatively high DC check, that must be accomplished. But it has to happen in order for the adventure to continue properly. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a key, literally a key. There's literally a key in a box, and you have to get the thievery check to open it. And if you don't, you can't... There comes a time that, shockingly, weirdly, the adventure design meant in this one moment, you had to get through this one door or the adventure can't continue.
Yeah.
So this brings up an interesting challenge, which I find that these games sometimes come up against. And it's like a paradox. You want to put a difficult test in front of the PCs that has high stakes, like really high stakes, and not just like you could live or die, but like you could miss your chance to do this thing that you must do to be the hero of the adventure. But on the other hand, you really can't have a high difficulty check being the only path forward in an adventure.
Yeah.
And I felt like this put us kind of in that position. And I did feel like you did a little bit of hand waving once we were up there to just get us across from the tower to the creature. You're like, you could just shimmy over that rope and you're there. Because it was time to move.
Believe it or not, it's all from the book. That's all straight from the book.
It says if you get a rope across, there's no check required?
Yep, then it's okay. There's no check required. Now, I was ramping up the tension. I think I said something to the effect like, you should virtually no problem. And you were like, virtually no problem or no problem getting across. But yeah, I mean, I get that. I get what you're saying. For me, I'm like, that thing's not...
What's the DC of the check?
The DC, it's a DC, I'll read right from the book. The demigod's flank is 20 feet from the edge of the tower, meaning a character will need to make a successful DC 20 athletics to leap, capital L, to land atop She Who Walks. Characters who fail can use the grab an edge action, DC 20 reflex save, to attempt to catch one of the trees lower on the flank. But a character who fails this save falls all the way to the ground 60 feet below. As long as one character successfully scampers onto She Who Walks, they can tie one of the Oatian's ropes or their own ropes to a tree to enable others to tie in and swing across without risk.
Okay, great. All right, great. So now I think that's decent design in the sense that you only need one. And if you have a party without one person with training
and I'm not moving that
athletics.
Creature until you get across. Or until you come up with another reasonable suggestion. Like, let's just climb it from the bottom. Which I would have been like, all right, it's going to be tricky. But
jumping
really
ahead
like,
for a second to Professor Eric's analysis of this situation. He says that he felt that your approach to it had a cinematic tinge of like, you got to go now. You know what I mean? Like, you can't puzzle this out. And he's like, that was really fun. But, like, it can be dangerous when there's a high DC check that you can't plan as a group. Like, all right, well, who goes? How can we aid them? How can we whatever? So anyway, he was like, it all worked out really well. But it does bring up that general issue of be careful when you're designing adventures, of having that all of a sudden you didn't realize you got yourself into a bottleneck where this one thing has to happen or the plot can't continue. Don't write yourself into a corner, right? As they say,
right.
With that. But I that is good to know, because I thought that you had to hand wave something in order to just keep the show moving.
No.
And I'm happy to hear that it was like, no, once a rope was over, it made it without risk.
Yeah.
Crossing was without
now,
risk.
Now, also, if you guys, if someone was like, I'm going to jump, and that information wasn't out there yet, I'd still let you jump just because it'd be funny if you fell.
It is funny if you fall. And in this case, it's really not going to be permadeath, you know, like at our level.
Just really weakening resources.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Which I love, especially in a 5-person party. Anytime I can have you use your resources, that's signed me up.
Well, I mean, honestly, man, I'm pretty terrified now. You know what I mean? Like, we're coming up against, look, this is whatever these creatures are that hop out. We're debating about this, Matthew and I. It's like, we're debating, is this a diplomatic encounter or is this a combat encounter? We don't know. And it's like, Ramius has been drained of healing resources. If this turns into a combat encounter, that's really scary. And if this is a multi-episode adventure over the back of this thing, it's like, a rest does not seem like it's in the future here. So it is very scary that those resources were sapped by the fall of Asta and Zephyr. So it really is like everything matters as you move forward. Every single instance of the die, the roll of the die, has its impact on the future. Anyway, what an ep. Could look back on this as a pivotal ep. We shall see. But for right now, let's analyze it and break it down with a little We Are Stupid.
We are stupid.
So good. Nicholas. All right. So let's return to last week's FOD before we move forward. One thing I wanted to mention, issue a correction. Is that what a newspaper says? What to issue a correction? We had come to, correct me if I'm wrong, but we had come to the conclusion that you don't have to take damage to roll the save against Stunning Fist.
It has to deal damage.
And it does have to deal damage. So we said that. I said that. Sorry, I was wrong. It does have to deal damage in order to trigger the save for Stunning Fist.
You know, so I caught that after the fact, but then I started debating with myself. Does deal damage, like you can deal damage, but the character doesn't take damage. Does dealing damage also include the taking of damage? You know what I mean? Because you're always going to deal damage, right? You can drive yourself crazy.
You can drive yourself
crazy with that. Like, deals damage, you'd think it means like it has to get through hardness, has to get through whatever. Or is it just the act of, I dealt damage, it just didn't take it. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the intention is that it actually gets through.
Another comment, I wanted to highlight this one. This is a YouTube comment from last week's FOD from Jason Keeley, senior developer at Pizer.
Nice.
Who wrote in, thank you, Jason, for writing in and said, one reason we changed the grab, knockdown, and push abilities for monsters is to allow PCs to benefit from having bonuses against such maneuvers or for buffing their fort save. Before, a monster could just automatically grab a character no matter how good they were at avoiding being grappled, which felt bad for some players. Now the monster has to actually be good at athletics. So thank you, Jason, for writing in. And we didn't think about that particular argument, but that makes a lot of sense. It's like, why should it be just as easy to grab Brother Ramius, you know, as it would be to grab Zephyr? You know what I mean? Maybe that shouldn't be as easy. Zephyr is a trained, extremely athletic and acrobatic monk. Brother Ramius is not athletic or strong at all. So it should be much easier for one than the other. There should be a critical success range for one or the other. And so I like that design choice. Good for you guys. And thanks for
explaining. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, as a GM, I want the free grab, but I get it. If I make that grab, I get it free next time. I have to spend an action, but I can automatically extend it by just using that action. And so that's a fair trade-off.
All right, getting into this week's episode. Thank you, Brother Ramius. Thank you, Professor
Thank you.
Eric.
Thank you, Brother Ramius.
Thank you, Brother Ramius. Hey, I love that guy. Thank you, Professor Eric, for writing in. We start with a little wrist slap for old Joe O'Brien. On Joe's attempts to aid Zephyr, he just says, quote, natural two, so no, unquote. That might have been a critical fail. Always say the full number, since a critical fail would add a penalty to Zephyr's roll.
Ah.
Zephyr missed, so it made no difference. Given that the DC to aid was 15, only an adjusted 5 or below would crit fail, blah, blah, blah. So you're probably fine. It probably was not a critical fail. But it's a bad habit to not say the total number on every check.
So, it's an O'Brien habit.
Yeah, and he said, which y'all have mostly broken, except for me, apparently. So, yeah, saying that, that is important to know, because we never necessarily know when you are going to make an aid check DC 20. You might not tell us in advance, and then somebody rolls it, and it's like, that would be an adjusted 19, or that would be an adjusted 9. It's like, that's a critical fail.
I should start making a DC 20 if your aid explanation is stupid.
Yes, yes. Like, well, that brings me.
That's stupid, DC 20.
That's honestly, dude, that brings me to my next point from Professor Eric. Quote, while I'm glad to see more use of aid and not just swinging for the fences on third attacks, I do think I also would have pushed back as a GM of someone aiding an attack from behind cover who couldn't even see what's going on. Zephyr's aid after running behind the wall. Maybe not disallow it in the moment, but have a talk after the session about slightly reining in the aid and needing it to be more involved. This is a good point, and you brought it up in the episode. You're like, I'm thinking about outlawing aid in that moment, and I know it's half a joke, but it's also because it's like, it is getting a little bit overused, and you're kind of saying like, oh, I can always just aid. Maybe not necessarily. So I think that we should be a little bit more
judicious
about how we use it, when we use it, and I think that you should, you know, require a good explanation of what's happening that you can wrap your head around before you allow an aid, you know? And I think you're well within your rights to be like, I don't think that would help. So no, I'm not going to, sorry, there's not going to be an aid right now. You know, we'll keep it moving.
Dude, it's like the push action in Call of Cthulhu. I'm such a softy for push. When you push an action to redo a skill check, you're supposed to describe what you're doing differently.
Differently than the first
attempt. And if you can't describe it, you don't get the push. And I'm just like, all right, you get the push. But I think I might be a little more pushy with being, justify your aid, or I'm going to raise the DC. I'll go back to the pre-remastered DC of DC 20. I don't want to discourage aid altogether, but it really should be more like, come up with a good
idea. Yes, good I agree. Let's not discourage aid altogether, but let's rein it in a little bit. To use Professor Eric's words. All right, this is going to be a fun, See this? This is a little book called The Player Core.
Oh, look at that.
I got one. I'm going to take this book, and I'm going to throw it at you.
Wait. I have one, too.
You have one, too? You want
I
a
have
sword?
One, too.
You want a sword fight with player cores?
I've never opened this.
I'm going to... Yeah, I could tell. I'm going to throw this book at you right now, because you did something wrong, and this is an extremely important rule that I was not aware of, because I also have not read this book closely enough.
I did
on the
wrong.
Distant, the Sphinx, this is from Professor Eric, the Sphinx had 60 feet of move speed, but according to Troy, it flew more than 70 feet in one action. Now, he's not even just talking about nickel and diming you on 10 feet. He's saying, page 419 of the player core, the fly action, and he quotes.
This is about difficult terrain.
Yeah, moving upward, straight up or diagonally, uses the rules for moving through difficult terrain. That is wild. I never realized that. So if your move is 60 feet in 2E remastered, you can only fly up 30. If your fly speed is 60, as an action, you can fly up 30. Even diagonal, up 30. So that's important to know. So thank you for pointing that out, because that's going to, as we get higher level, that's going to matter for characters. It's going to matter for a lot of people. He says as a sub point, as a minor help for Foundry, you may already know this, Troy, if you have the token selected, the top left input box on the token is designed to record height offsets, which can help with bookkeeping.
Yeah, it helps with bookkeeping, but it doesn't help with the ruler thing, because it would be great is if they came up with a module which would then do Pythagoras when you try and do the ruler. Because if you say something is 100 feet up, but it's only 10 feet away from you, and you do the ruler, it'll say 10 feet. I wish it would do the calculation. And I've done that before for when a character has been raised. I don't do it all the time. But yeah, difficult terrain to move like that. It's good. Keep me honest with that.
Yeah.
Stuff and we like gotta, flying, we gotta I just do it like too. Try to fucking keep it moving. But like, if you say, hey, yo, man, you can't move that, I would stay honest.
Dude, I could tell you a big, big one right now is oh my God, my brain just shuts down sometimes. Who is Sydney's character in Strange Aeons?
Suki.
Like, Suki turns into a bird all the time, goes flying around doing whatever she feels like. Like, higher level PCs are going to have to know this rule, too. It's like, if you fly up, you can move at half your speed as an action. Mm-hmm. So, I will mention that to Sid and Atticus as well. Like, Atticus can cast fly. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, these are very important rules to know that I just missed or willfully ignored because I did not want to be held to that that difficult rule.
Right.
All right, a bit of praise from Professor Eric. Good job on the critical fail becoming a fail incapacitate rules. Loved the excitement on the player side and then the secret knowledge on the GM side causing Troy to be excited about what was going to happen. So, you know, in this moment, we're seeing the incapacitation rule now regularly being done correctly on the GCP, which is great. And that pretty much wraps it up. The rest of Professor Eric's breakdown is really analyzing this bottleneck part of the adventure, of the jump, of the leap. And he really gets granular with breaking down how difficult a DC 20 athletics check is for an average party of our level. So anybody that is highly trained in it is probably looking at a +9, like the highest, highest level.
Really? Not a +13?
I don't think so. I mean, we're third level. Okay. Yeah, I think we're third level.
That's crazy. So it's less than a 50% chance for someone to make it?
I'm sorry. He said +9, +11 if they chose that skill for their expert. So yeah, I think 11 would be the max.
Okay, I believe
So he says it's pretty close to 50-50 in the best case scenario. It feels more like a quick make a decision moment, point of no return commitment, and less like we need to solve this puzzle. That what I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And then he just had some suggestions for other ways that parties could approach this, whether it's reflex saves or, you know, falling partway but landing on a creature's leg, taking damage but being on it at least so you could, like, stay in the story or whatever. Little suggestions that he could have done to keep it moving. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's an interesting analyzation of the adventure design and how it kind of bottlenecked us there. But I really liked hearing your explanation of it. It made sense to me, so I'm glad that it worked out. All right, let's go to listener mail. Let's see see what the peeps want to talk about today.
It's time for listener mail. Gotta get your brain up on it. Time for listener mail.
I had to pick this one because this person is he's one of your people, Troy. Maxime Perrault from Quebec, Canada. Hey, a French Canadian.
I thought he was from Boston. They're my original people.
What's up, Maxime? Thank you so much for writing in. Maxime's question is on GM notes and player notes. Hey, guys, first of all, awesome work with Gatelock. Awesome work on Gatewalkers for Troy and the team. As a GM who is playing this campaign, Troy brings everything from the book to another level, and the players' role play are insane. The question is,
so nice.
How does Troy take notes, if he does at all? Do you have an app that you use? Also, how do the players take notes? Keep up the good work, Max. So I just want to give some insight into our note-taking and how we sort of structure this stuff, because this does come up in multiple games, multiple different parties, and how people approach it. Troy, do you actually ever take any notes on things that happened, or do you always just kind of listen back to recordings? Like, you know, how do you sort of try to remember what ideas to come up with next in terms of challenging the characters?
I don't take any notes. I have a pretty robust Google Doc that I use for my like campaign prep, where I just rewrite the adventure. And, you know, that's just like a living document that I'll constantly be adding to, taking away from, you know, because I go from like the verbatim copying of the adventure to like rewriting it to then adding my own flair to being like, oh, we should do a dream here, to like maybe reaching out to you guys and getting some input from you, putting that into my document. So that document contains everything, but I very rarely am I like, oh, that's interesting what they said, but I'm going to come back to that later. And not because I don't think it's interesting, but just because I do the episode, I watch all the videos to give Francis notes before it's published. And so it's a part of me. I feel like I have a pretty good
memory.
Yeah. That I, if something is going to be relevant, I'm going to find a way to use it. It doesn't mean I never take notes. There might be times when somebody will say something like, oh man, this is going to be great 50 episodes from now, but it's rare that I do that. I just kind of remember.
I am running Get in the Trunk. And so my note taking, I also have a Google Doc that I work off of where I take all my notes for episodes and for prep and stuff like that. I've, as we've progressed and as I've gotten more years into it, I prep less and less and less, pre-prep less and less than I used to. And I sort of just jot down some ideas. I use structures that I pulled out of reading games or books like Play on Safe and The Lazy DM. Like those concepts of how you can have one line sort of settings or NPCs or whatever to just give yourself some structure that keeps you free to play with the players. That's largely what my notes look like. But then I can tell you what I do with Get in the Trunk is immediately after an episode ends, I start the notes for the next episode. And all I do is typically write two or three ideas. It's just like ideas that came out of that session that make me think like, I need to put this in front of them, or Roger said something like this, and I need to, you know, make sure that that manifests itself into an event or a moment or whatever. So I'll just jot down a couple quick notes in that minute. And when I say a couple quick, I'm talking two sentences, three sentences max usually. And then I'll open that document up 4 days later. And I open it up and it's just like, it puts me right back there. And if I hadn't written that down right after, I don't think that it would be as clear in my mind.
That's smart.
So that's a good thing. I also like to re-listen to stuff that we record before I play. Almost every Gatewalker session I go into, I re-listen to the entire previous episode we recorded. That helps me because I don't really take good notes as a player. Within our Gatewalkers campaign, Sydney takes notes. Matthew takes notes. They take separate notes. And we'll kind of consult with each other off air about stuff. Kate keeps the loot. I don't know if I've seen that loot sheet in a while. But one of the things that I like to do is I've created a standard loot sheet that is loot and NPCs. And they're spreadsheets. So on one sheet is loot and its value and stuff and who has it. And on the other tab is NPCs. And it's just names, locations, and then some notes about them or who they are or what part they have in the story. Mm-hmm. That document has been great in Gatewalkers because it helps us keep our NPCs straight. And then we share it among all the players. And I do it in Blood of the Wild as well. And Mary Lou is actually really good about keeping that updated with me. She keeps the loot sheet and she updates the NPCs as well with me. And that one has a ton of NPCs because it's like a clan-based sort of story. And so you have like the clan leadership and you have other hunters and you have like political kind of things going on. And so there's a lot of NPCs and we keep that straight on that Google sheet. Nick in Legacy of the Ancients takes unbelievable notes. He literally bullet point summarizes every moment of the episode. So like he has one full page for every episode. That's just like what happened. And what's cool about that is like you can control F search that thing for a name or a moment even and like find where it was, what happened and get some of the details. And he shares that with us and I literally open that up at the start of every episode. And sometimes in episode, I'm searching back and I'll find something from 10 episodes ago that a note he took that I can use for my character to like bring something up or say, I had a dream about that, you know, because Skid wrote me a dream and I would never take good notes on it, but Nick took good notes on it. So yeah, I think those shared Google Docs are really a huge upgrade in our note-taking across these games that I never used to have before we started recording. So,
well, you know, what's funny is Foundry makes it pretty easy. That's something we don't really use a ton, but the journal options on Foundry is something you guys could delve into a little bit. Skid doesn't really take any notes, but you know, the rest of you could like be adding to a shared journal on there, and I could be better at populating that with the images and stuff. But it becomes a little trickier when I start changing stuff, because I got some pretty big changes coming up, and there's just a little more work on my part because I can't just drag and drop.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's pretty great to have that. I mean, look at what with the other tabletop that we use for getting the trunk in time for chaos. I mean, it's indispensable to have all of those notes virtually shared tabletop. I was looking back to like when we used to play Jade Regent. Do you remember I used to send out summaries before each session?
Mm-hmm.
Or even after, like, this is what you guys did. I'm trying to find like one of my summaries that I wrote you guys, because they were pretty like thorough, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I would be like, all right, here's everything you did. Book 4, session 5. Oh, yeah. Wow, man, I'm looking back to, we have so many Jade Regent emails.
I'm looking at this, that these notes that Nick takes for Legacy of the Ancients. So he didn't used to organize it by episode. He just took straight notes. But at episode 24, he began writing it by episode. He generally highlights in yellow any item that we find or gold pieces. So any treasure is highlighted in yellow, which is cool. And then he puts in bold character names, but also things we need to remember to do, which is cool, because then he'll copy and paste that into a list of like things to remember to do. Remember to ask this person about this when we return to whatever town. Remember to do that, because you always kind of forget that stuff. And this document is now 147 pages long. His
That's
notes
awesome.
For Legacy of the Ancients. Yeah, it's really badass. So good on you, Nick. Good work.
Dude, you know, it's funny. So I found Jade Regent. This is the title of the email. This is December 10th, 2014. So this is like, we're talking about Glass Cannon point.
Yeah.
I called it season 2, session 2. So it would have been book 2, session 2 recap. Kind of want to just read it, but I'll give you some highlights. After a brief lesson from Sandru on how the various quarters of Khalsgarn are laid out, the party decides to split up as Sandru, Ameiko, and the rest of the caravan go off to blend in as well. The party checks into a local inn at the Bone Quarter. Blah, blah, blah. I keep going on. Meanwhile, I have to make sure I don't have anything inappropriate in here. Meanwhile, after...
don't just read without thinking first.
After visiting the Jade... This skips down a little bit. Meanwhile, after visiting the Jade Quarter and a brief interlude where Maelstrom, which was your character... Yeah. In dog form, chatted up another local mutt.
Oh, that's right. I remember that now.
Maelstrom, Ike, and Aramis travel to the fire quarter to try and find a guide to take them over the crowd of the world. They end up at a local grog shop called the Grim Harvest, where the locals drink out of skulls. They talk to a very drunk and slightly bruised and battered Varki trader named Ushaka. Dude, this, I remember this session. It's so great. Yeah, I wish I should do this more often. But it's long, dude. It's like 8 paragraphs long. And
it takes
just
a lot
one,
of time.
Because we were playing for 4 or 5 hours and drinking.
I mean, you do it for Strange Aeons. And then you read it out loud.
Do. That's right.
Yeah.
So we still
do. So we do have it for Strange Aeons. But yeah. Anyway, that is going to wrap it up for us, guys. Fun pod. That's it, man. That's it. We got to keep it tight. We got shit to do today, man. I got to get my teeth drilled.
I got to get my butt looked at. I don't know. What do they do at physical snap?
Finger in the butt, man. Yeah. Always. Thanks so much for hanging out with us, guys. Hope you enjoyed. Everybody have a fantastic holiday weekend. Hey, it's a holiday weekend this weekend. Enjoy. Check out the Glass Cannon podcast, episode 49 tomorrow night. Talk Nerdy Town Hall tonight at 7:30 Eastern time. Come join us on Discord. And we'll see you next week. Until then, take it easy, everybody. Have a good holiday weekend. Enjoy, and we'll see you next time.
Peace!
College football!
Yeah, I'm back, baby!
It's time to make your membership official. Become an official member of the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com. That's jointhenaish.com, where you'll get access to exclusive podcasts and live streams you can't find anywhere else. See what everybody's talking about and join the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com.